Hello and welcome to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. You're listening to me, Al Coates.
And me, Scott Castleman.
stupid boys. This is a quality podcast. None of your nonsense.
Oh, we've got, we've got competition in that old Beth Neal, haven't we? Honestly.
Blimey. Oh, I know.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that was just probably one of our best podcasts yet.
You had a lovely time, didn't you?
I did. I had an amazing time. It was just so funny. I have not laughed so much in a long time doing a podcast because obviously, you know, it's just normally me and you.
She's as dry as sticks. She's just...
And that wooden spoon has just done... It's gone viral. The podcast wooden spoon has been retweeted by a podcast person on Twitter, I think. So we're making an impact. We've got global reach for this rubbish.
Global reach, literally. Two countries, literally.
Yeah, better than Global Radio are doing this week, but that's another matter. We won't go there.
Anyway, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
I am.
Well, I'm a bit croaky today, actually.
But you are a bit. Oh, yes. I'm okay. Yeah. Well, actually, no, I'm terrible. But you know, that's just life, isn't it? I'll be honest with you. I had a shocking, shocking few
I didn't
weeks.
Ask what you thought about yourself. I was just.
Do you remember in the 80s? This is really no. Terrible podcast. In the 80s, there was a novelty record that got into the charts called was it Capstick Comes Home?
No, I was literally 4 in the 80s.
No, you liar. And it was the Horvitz music.
I was.
Me and my father will never forget first day down pit. Do you remember that?
Oh, I kind of remember that, yeah. And there's a was line, that like the Horvitz advert, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was a bit like that. And there was a line in it where he said, and my father picked up mother, bit throat. And it was bit throat. And we had an incident this week where one of my children picked me up bit throat.
Oh, yeah. I have heard about that, yes. Yes.
But we're all
had
okay.
Heard. Yes, you're still alive.
Everyone's sadly. Okay. Yeah. I've got no marks, everything's fine. Bit throat.
Interesting.
Well, yeah, that's just interesting. The cut and thrust of some people's lives, isn't it? Anyway,
exactly.
Well, that's a bit grim. We went grim, we were laughing, but it's quite grim.
Yeah, we did, yeah. So what have you been up to, Al? Come on, what have you been up to?
I have been... Do you know what? I'm just really chocker, trying to work my way through a lot of different things. This is my busy time of the year because I have my students, they're all getting ready to fly and be free into student world. Because, you know, social work students have to do a certain amount of practice placement.
Yeah.
So I'm a practice educator and I'm kind of one of these, you know, I'm like Irene Cara where, you know, you remember Irene Cara from Fame? I'm like 80s references this week. Where if you want fame and this is where you start working with sweat. And that's what I said to my social work students when they start. You want to be social workers, and this is where you start paying by sweat. So they're coming to their end, and I have to write up their final reports. And
do they wear sweatbands and like those sock things and stuff?
Yeah, leg warmers, snooze.
Yeah, leg warmers. That's it. Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, it's a real experience then of the, you know.
Yeah, and every lunchtime we dance across the mean streets of Tottenham.
Yeah. Oh, fabulous.
Across taxis and everything, like social work students. It's a genuine education for them all. So it is my busy time of the year. I have to write lots of interesting things about how they've done, and they've all done fantastically, so that's good.
Good.
And are you busy?
Always busy. You know me. I never stop. I'm just, just keep going. Just keep ploughing on.
It's one of my life's great mysteries, what you actually do. I don't actually... What is?
Oh, do you know, you keep saying that. You know what my job title is.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do. And if you don't, then you don't read properly, do you?
Where is it? Why would I read it anywhere?
It's on my email signatures. It's on...
You don't email
everything.
Me.
I do email you.
Not in your official
now
capacity.
And again. Well, sometimes. Oh, right. Not always. Oh, anyway. Well. Anyway, what's it got to do with you, what I do?
I just got your annual appraisal sheet came in. So, sort of better.
Oh, dear. Oh, don't go there. Oh. Anyway,
too soon.
Do you know what? It's funny because the first couple of minutes of this, of recording this, I was thinking, I must ask you about this. And they've all gone out of my head now.
Totally,
so, they couldn't have been that important, really.
That's true. I think that we've got a few things. Did you notice what I'd put on Twitter about 2 hours ago?
Yes, I did. What that you were prepping for the podcast. What's that all about? I just turn up and, you know, I'm on social media, I'm texting people, I'm putting kids to bed, I'm doing the washing up, putting the washing, the laundry in, you know, and just chatting to you. I don't understand what this what this preparation thing is.
Well, I have been reading, an interesting article came across my social media profile about stewardship, about the replacement of permanency, a move away from adoption, and some of the kind of the hang-ups around adoption. And it kind of fed into what we were talking about last week about identity, about severance of identity with Beth Neal, which I think was, again, really interesting because that the issue of contact feeds into identity and can continuing that initial identity. So this article came across, and I'll put it into the blurb of this podcast about stewardship. And it was saying, well, why do we do it like this? Why do it differently? And to be honest with you, I put it in my... It's on my Facebook page, and there were some comments, and people were not particularly impressed with it on the whole.
Right.
But it provoked this question about why do we want to remove identity, sever identity, and children then become kind of property? So the question was, would you adopt us? Would you adopt if the children didn't take your surname?
So it was.
Yeah. If when you adopted children, they didn't take your name... what would that be, a big deal or not a big deal? And I think I was trying to unpick a bigger question about ownership and about how we connect to children. So what would you answer?
Well, can I just say
no,
there's, because I said to you before we started recording, you went yes, no, maybe, and the maybe bit is a tricky bit, isn't it? And the maybe is what I clicked.
Right.
Because I'm always in the middle on these things.
Shall I tell you the results before you tell me what...
Yeah, go on.
Unless
go on.
So we've got...
I know maybe it's quite low down because I have seen them, because I have access to the Twitter account as well, mate.
So, well, yeah, right now, because it is closed, I closed it at 9 and it said 64% said yes, they would adopt, even if the children didn't. 9% said no.
Right, that's interesting.
And 27% said depends, or maybe.
Right, yeah. So I think that depends on maybe bit is because, and I'm always, you know me, I'm always saying this, it's about the confidence when you go into this sort of stuff and how you deal with it. So as an example, you know, you have an adoption support plan placed in front of you when you're going to be matched with these specific children. If you're a first time, and this is no disrespect to first time adopters, you go on the advice of your social worker.
Yeah.
You don't tend to think, oh, can I challenge this? Can I say, actually, do you know what? That's not right. Da, 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 da. So the maybe for me, or the perhaps, or whatever it was, is all about that kind of lack of experience at that early age. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether it would have made a difference to us or not. But I say that with 13 years of reflection in there, or 12 years, or however many it is. I think if you'd asked me that 12 years ago, I'd have said, well, as part of their identity, they would have to have our surnames.
Yes.
Yeah? And that would, but that would have been my ignorance.
Yeah. Is ignorance the right word?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. It's
is ignorance. It insecurity?
No, I think it's ignorance, because actually I think that 12 years ago, we knew that the potential was that these children were going to be the children that we ended up having as a part of our family, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But in my head, it was still the 1980s, and adoption was a lovely thing, and it was relinquished babies, and, you know, all that kind of... All that narrative that has now completely been blown out of the water, and now we are trying to teach, you know.
Yeah, I don't think that narrative has, but I know what you mean.
No.
Yeah.
No, you know, you know what I'm saying. They kind of,
Okay.
It's just, I'm always very cautious about answering stuff like this, because there's the now me, and then the 12 years ago me, and they're very different people.
Yeah.
They're very, very, very different people.
Okay, so this article was kind of unpicking that about... It was asking some really interesting questions. And it was by a former judge of the Family Court of Australia, Professor the Right Honourable Nahum Musin. talked about permanency and adoption. And to quote the first line, I think the concept of permanency is contrary to what we regard as being in the best interests of children. We shouldn't be talking about permanency, we should be talking about long term. And once we get to that, really, what you've got to do is to construct a care regime for each particular child depending on his or her needs. And you can't say one size fits all, that's fine. But then he goes on to talk about modelling the lifelong relationships between the child and the adult carer. And he sort of talks about reframing them not as mum and dad or mum and mum or dad and dad. He talks about aunt and uncle. Would you have adopted if you were going to become uncle and uncle?
Interesting silence.
No, because I asked this question, even the question about would you take their name, and I've sat and I've thought long and hard about it.
Yeah.
And I
don't know. I think it's a hard question to answer with 12 years behind you.
Well, I was thinking now.
I'm tempted to say probably no. I'm tempted to say probably not.
I agree with you. I don't want to be uncle. I want to be dad. Does that make it? I'm being really honest there.
Yeah.
That's maybe not. Well. But, I mean, suddenly, mummy, friend of the show.
Uh-huh.
Friend. We should get back on.
Have we had her back on since she got married?
No, I think we've maybe fallen out with her. She's got a man in her life.
Oh, yeah. So she's replaced us with a real man.
Virtual men. She made a good point about, because she's obviously come through the fostering route, and she talked about the simplification for children in relation to their identity about belonging.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting, because obviously she got married, so her children have got her maiden name. Can I call it a maiden name? A pre-marriage name?
Yeah. I don't know. We would traditionally call it maiden name, wouldn't
we? It's a terribly modern world.
Yes, but traditionally we'd call it maiden name. Okay. And unless anybody's got any other suggestions, it's a maiden name.
Look, I'm not falling out with Suddenly Mummy, because she would have me any day of the week.
Oh, she would. She'd have you on a spike, actually, in the bottom of the garden.
But
and
I thought
she would send the kids on you.
Yeah, I thought that's interesting to think about. She's got children now who'd have a different surname to her who are... Yeah, she was. You can read a tweet, it's on there. It's if you follow the timeline from the thread from that thing. But then also Polly... Bantam Polly at Bantam Polly actually said, really proud of my adoptive parents' name.
Yeah.
But also really important, her birth name.
Yeah.
And also, no, my phone's gone funny. Catherine Teresa, which is at Cat Teresa. Again, another adoptee talking about it being really important. So I just think, wow. Do you want to be stewards or parents?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? And it's interesting because that word ownership.
Mm.
Ownership?
Mm-hmm.
You own a house. You don't own human beings. True. You may be the... Oh, God. It's such a... I feel like you're really pushing me tonight, Colt, so I'll kill you for this later. But it's such a, you know, you own a house, you own a car, because you've paid for them. We don't own children. We don't own family. They are just, you know, they're human beings. Yeah. They will eventually, you know, in 10 years' time, they will be adults and they'll have a, you know.
But it's language, the language of ownership and the language of belonging are kind of merged, aren't they? You're like, you're my friend.
Yeah, and you pay for me every day.
Yeah, every day. Hiya, what
you
are you doing now?
Every day.
But we talk about my children. Or my children do this.
But I think that's just, to me, it's just, it's a phrase. It's a phrase. You picked me up a couple of podcasts ago about that word behaviours. Yeah?
Yeah.
It's a traditional phrase that I've not been able to move away from, because that's how my thinking goes back to the 80s, you know, that's the way I am. And the children that are born today, they will be using different phrases to the ones that we use, because we are representative of that time.
Yeah, but you know it that language matters.
It doesn't Yeah, I know, and it does, and you're right. But equally, I think that there's too much emphasis on mistakes being made. So yeah. you need to be informed about it, rather than someone saying, do you know what, you've used that wrong word, you're a this, you're a that, you're the next thing, you're offensive, you know, absolutely. Blah, 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 blah. That, to me, is just, it's a bit of an overreaction, because actually, for, you know, as far as I'm concerned, 2019 years, the word behaviour is
one. Since Jesus.
Since time began. You know, a naughty kid was classed as having behaviour problems. You know, if we're going to box about that.
We're so off the beaten track here. How would you get onto Jesus?
No, I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting. And, you know, so that word ownership for me, I don't like it. I don't own anything apart from, you know, things I have purchased, that I've gone into a shop or that I've ordered online
inanimate objects. You don't.
Yeah. And I don't see human beings as being owned by anybody.
Of course,
I get why people might see it like that, but I think it's more about identity than ownership.
But yeah, you're away from the question. I guess the difficult question is.
I'm avoiding the question.
Right. Okay. Do you want to be a? Would you want to be a dad or Uncle Scott or just Scott?
No, I'm an uncle to my nephews and nieces and godchildren.
But if at point of adoption they said to you, right, this okay, the adoption isn't what it was. You are a steward of these children, which of course you're a steward. Like all parents are stewards, but actually. Mm. You are not going to be a dad.
Yeah.
Because that child has a dad.
But is that not, again, how we refer to it? Because a dad is, traditionally, a dad is someone who is biologically connected to a child. Adoption used to be quite hidden. So, you know, thinking back to the 60s, people didn't find out till their parents passed away that had been adopted,
yeah.
You know, all that sort of stuff. So is it about, you know, is it about general language that we use? Actually, I don't use that kind of language with my children when I say, well, you're not my son, you're my adopted son, you know, because I wouldn't do that to them because actually their experiences is what they will talk about when they're ready to talk about them. And they will say, well, actually, do you know what? I didn't want to be adopted, or actually it's ruined my life, or, you know, or it's been a great experience because actually, you know, da, 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 whatever their experiences is. And I will accept that because actually that is their thing. They didn't choose to be adopted, did they?
Because they might reframe you, mightn't they? I mean, that's the potential for all adopted children as they move into adulthood, that they might reframe that. And I think that was hinted at Bantam Polly's tweet, sort of saying that it's important, but actually since the subsequent learning is also important, and it's kind of, are we sort of saying, oh well, you can't have both, but actually children can have both. They can hold them both in tension, that their identity is woven into two parts, that their biological identity is one place and their story is what is part of our story. This idea of stewardship is, I find, really interesting, because actually I thought.
But I also think.
I went into adoption for, I think, quite altruistic. Altruistic reasons, but on reflection, I wanted to be a dad. I wanted to be called dad. I wanted to be a dad.
Yeah. Can you just explain the word altruistic? Because I need to Google it and. That's kind of, some of our audience might need to.
Well, altruistic in the sense that it was for no other purpose than to benefit children. For just good motives. It wasn't to get anything out of it. But then on reflection, I'm not sure that's true. And that the stewardship article raises the question of, is that what people want?
Just so you know, listeners, there's a certain doctor trying to ring Al. She spent all day with him, and she's now ringing up. He's just showed me his phone flashing. And Wendy Thorley, leave us alone. This is podcast time.
Just give me five minutes.
Not that she's listening, but you know.
But I just think that, well, yeah. This idea that, do you think that will we see a huge reduction in adoption if we just say that you can only come on those ultra altruistic terms?
Yeah.
Is there a cohort of men and women who are prepared to take on children without that parent-child relationship, but as in a steward, carer-child relationship?
Yeah. But is that not just a similar version of foster care, just a different name? And maybe with a little bit more legal kind of responsibility? Yeah.
Well, I guess there's maybe a severance from the state, which... Well, you know, you being a foster carer. Well, I think every adopter's had that moment.
Yeah.
Foster carers had that moment where you go, oh, good, the social workers have left. We're no longer having to have the LAC review, looked after child reviews, or the supervision visits from the children or the guardians. Because all that stuff comes as a bit of a shock, I think, as well, doesn't it?
It does, because you're taught about it during your prep and all that sort of stuff, but actually it slips your mind because, you know, the nature of adoption is, you know, the chances are probably most of us actually just want to be called mum or dad, or pop or mama, or, you know, whatever you're kind of, you know, whatever the children call you.
Father. Papa.
Yeah. Papa. So I think that, but you do forget about all that stuff, and I'm very conscious of that, because I know that that's how we felt. You know, we had the LAC review, I hate that word LAC. Or that acronym LAC, it just sounds
It's one of
so
my hobbies
offensive.
With my students is
it's
making
so
them
offensive.
Not say it. Children
so offensive.
After. Children were
So yeah, children looked after is so much better. And I always remember Gareth Marr had a huge thing about that, didn't he? Bless God rest his soul. Anyway, where was I?
Do you still
I?
Get phantom tweets from Gareth Marr's Twitter account?
Yes, I do, saying that people have unfollowed and followed. And it's like a reminder that he's still here with us, folks.
People might not know who Gareth Marr was. Gareth
No,
Marr.
I know. Could you imagine if we'd had him on this as well?
Oh, that would have been
with
fantastic.
With those Barry White tones.
Well, Gareth Marr is responsible for getting the virtual schools to have responsibility for children who have been previously looked after. So that includes adopted children. So shout out to Gareth Marr, wherever you are.
Yeah.
But he then passed away, didn't he, a couple of years back, unfortunately. So I don't know how we've got into that. We've just so far off the beaten track. This is terrible. What were you saying about...
What was I saying?
About looked after reviews, you were talking about how that...
Yeah, so the child looked after, which we'll call them, that's not their official name, but the reviews, and, you know, having the guardian, my social worker, their social worker, and all these people come around your house is quite intimidating, especially when the kids, you've picked them up from school after they've been with you for 4 weeks, they're already totally dysregulated.
Disheveled.
You're even like that. And I always remember ours at the time, week stage, when we were going to be applying for the adoption order. And they said, we wouldn't actually support you to apply for the adoption order right now because this has been said and that's been said. And you've said this and you've said that. Yes, because we're trying to advocate for the children that we really, really want to parent for the rest of their lives.
We're doing the thing you wanted us to do.
Exactly, yeah. And now you're criticizing us for it. But I think essentially that, you know, that's a missing piece, isn't it? That's a bit that you do forget about. It would be really interesting. That should be a poll. During prep, do you remember being told this? And did you remember after the children were placed? Because actually, I think high level of people,
it's because you've also, some of those social work professionals are not people who are involved previously. So you've got the children's social worker. You might have met, but then has to do their statutory visits, which are legally every 6 weeks, but usually every 4 weeks. You've got the guardian, you might have an independent reviewing officer, you've got a whole raft of people, you've got unannounced visits potentially. And I...
But do you care about that when you go through the prep?
No, but it comes a shock because there's a sense of you're focusing solely on the adoption, the placement. You don't realise that these children are not...
They're not yours, no.
No, they're in this netherworld, aren't they? They've got a care order, usually. And I think that's a shock to a lot of people. And I remember being quite profound having, you know... I remember sitting with a guardian and him asking, oh, do you think this is in the best interest of the children? He go, well, haven't we already been at this point? Actually, it was very good.
And I think that's one of the things as well that kind of struck me about reading that report was It does need to be in the best needs of the, to, for the best needs of the child. Of course it does. But, and this is a big but, how can you ask a two-year-old what they'd want? You can't. And I think the assumption has always been made that actually a child would just want to be part of a family. Therefore, adoption, in my eyes, still exists for that reason, because actually we are making an assumption that a two-year-old is going to want to be a part of a family and want to be able to call someone mum, dad, mum, you know, pop, ma, whatever, you know, whatever is, whatever the family makeup is.
A sense of normality or society's norm.
To be like their society peers. So going through school, they've got a mum, a dad, or, you know,
whatever.
Or whatever. Which I know there's a bit of a contradiction in that, because obviously the tradition would be a mum and a dad, and, you know, we're a dad and a daddy, and there'll be a mum and a mummy, and, or, you know, whatever your names are.
It's a terribly modern world.
So, yeah, it is. But, you know, and I know that's kind of different as well. So, you know, who knows what will happen in the future. But for me, it's about that kind of sense of belonging. And, you know, it was mentioned about identity. And it's been mentioned by on Twitter as well that, you know, the surname thing, you know, was part of an identity with their family that they grew up with, so they identify with that. And someone actually said, I didn't look anything like them, but I could still identify with them because I had the same surname. And I think that's quite a profound statement to make, actually, and I think that's quite a key.
Yeah.
However, you know, my children, we didn't change anything apart from their surname, and we added in a middle name. So they've got like 12 names.
12 names.
Just, you know. But we didn't want to be, and this was before we even used to talk about identity and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Before identity was discovered in the late 2020s.
Exactly, yeah.
But did you change, because that's the next question, because people then start to ask that question from the poll. What about the first names, middle names? Did you change, because that still remains a very murky issue, doesn't it?
Changing
first names, because I think there's obviously children can have incredibly distinctive names.
Yeah, I know.
The best one I ever saw was Charlene with an X.
Charlene with an X.
That's exactly what I thought. How do you do? And the people went, and so we had to write it down. We all sat around in the office and thought about it for a while. This is donkeys years ago, and the name was changed. It was at the beginning. X-A-L-E-N-E. Yeah, that's the. And people say, well, that is really distinctive, and that means that a child is then...
very distinctive,
that child will be found in about 1 second on Google.
3.2 seconds,
But would you change the name... Would you have changed the names of your children?
No.
Even if those were names you didn't like?
No.
Even if it was Elvis?
No.
Elvis Cassin-Rennie?
No.
That's fine. I'm being facetious.
I think it's you're right to challenge, because I think the only reason, and I know people who've done it.
What's their justification?
I don't know, and it's quite recent, so I can't really talk about it. So.
Well, that's a great podcast.
Just in case you listen.
We know some things we can't talk about.
I just believe that actually, we should honour the identity that is given in terms of the everyday name that everybody will call them, because that's, you know, that is their name. And I think the only time I would say, yeah, okay, I get it, is if there's a real risk to the child in terms of it being like Charlene with an X kind of thing, you know, if it's a really, really, really big risk.
And
on
if
them.
There's a risk, which takes us back to the last podcast with them, was it Raquel who was talking about actually thinking, what is that risk?
Yeah. What, you know, exactly.
Is
yeah.
someone going to
yeah,
turn
exactly.
up and
yeah.
throw the kid in the back of a car and drive off?
But
I mean, anecdotally, you'll know, because I'm around this world enough, anecdotally, I know of stories of people say, well, I know someone who just didn't like the name, so changed them. But I just think, I don't know.
That's just wrong, isn't it? I just don't like that.
Is it a double standard, though, just to say, well, I can tolerate this level of erasure of your background, but not this level of erasure of your background, your identity?
Yeah, I know. It's
because we give...
It's a, Go on.
You gave your children new middle names. Did you choose them for them, or did they choose them themselves?
No, I think this was... Again, I mean, with Jacob, it's very different because he wanted to be like his brothers.
Yeah.
So, you know... excuse me. But 12 years ago, that thing you've just talked about, you wanted to be called dad, or you wanted to be a dad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We wanted to be parents. This was the route we chose. We could have gone down the surrogacy route. We didn't. We wanted to do something that actually was going to benefit children, all that sort of stuff that you can, you know, that you could unpick and kind of go back to why we ended up adopting. And when it came to middle names, it was more of a kind of just a way of saying to them that you are part of our family as well.
Mm-hmm.
You were given these names by your first family or your birth family. And in retrospect, and probably kind of that argument over would you still have parented them? I probably would have done, but that wasn't a discussion point at that time. It was a case of, you know, well, they would, when they're adopted, they will become your legal children. Yeah, exactly. And the middle name was more of a way of them being able to have some connection with our families. So, you know, Fraser has Triss's dad's name in it. And Brandon has my dad's name in it.
Yeah.
And then when Jacob came along, he had two additional middle names because he only had one.
I want two.
All three of my children have three middle names. But that, you know, like I say, Jacob wanted to be like his brothers. So we thought long and hard about how we do this. Well, we didn't want Tristan. It's just not right. It's so 1970s. And yes, Tristan was named after all creatures great and small. That is where his name came from.
Excellent.
Whereas Jacob was very, like, he wanted to have Scott in his middle name. And so we looked at Triss's family tree and chose a name that was actually relevant to that, so that he feels that connection. So, yeah, I mean, do you know what? It's middle names, isn't it? There were 7 and 8. So they were involved in that decision as well. They wanted that.
It's complicated, isn't it? Cause
it is.
Because I think that when my eldest... she chose her middle name. She mm-hmm. was old. She was 6, 7 mm-hmm. nearly. And then the next one was 3, and she had no idea. Honestly, yeah. mm-hmm. Give a 3-year-old choose a name. So she wanted to be like Potato.
Dora.
Dora. Yeah, Dora. And so we had this bonkers conversation. We were going, so what about Alice? And she was going, no, that's a boy's name. And I was thinking, no, you're thinking of Alice Cooper. And we eventually came up with a compromise. But then the rest of them, I just think that, I don't know, maybe I've been overthinking adoption too much, the ethics and values. I think I have been overthinking.
I think you have, but I think that's a common thing, isn't it, when you're immersed in it, not just in your family life, but also in your working life as well. You do tend to become immersed sometimes and all these thoughts and all these things cross through your head and you're like, ooh, I wonder. And then you're off chasing these sparkly things and then, you know, you kind of go on to something else.
Yeah. Nicely linked, segue something else. I was going to ask you about, well, we've got a lot of guests, new. We're looking for a different type of guests, haven't we? I'm not sure we've got any definite confirmations though, which is not uncommon.
They're waiting to see what we say about them.
But I think they're all lovely people. Good luck.
They are amazing.
But we've had an interesting couple of guests, and we've got, by the time this comes out, we'll have had Bantam Polly, at Bantam Polly on.
Yeah, which I listened to today because you keep forgetting to turn me these things.
That's right. And you listened to Courtney as well. And the voices of adoptees.
Yes. No, adoptee conversations.
Yes. Conversations.
It's a new format, isn't it? And we're finding our way with it.
Yes.
And tweaking it as we go. But we do have some amazing adoptees coming up, I have to say, that we're going to be having conversations with. And I think it's worthwhile just being clear, we're not calling them adoptee stories or anything like that, because actually it is a conversation, and the conversations are led by
them.
Yeah, exactly. So we will ask the first question to kick them off, and then it's off they go. and we might pick up on a few of the things that they say, but definitely not to challenge them. It's just to get kind of a bit more clarity around what it is they mean, or, you know, if they do dry up, then we can give them more questions. But
okay. I guess
it's very different to the doctor's stories and the foster carer stories and the interviews that we do, because this is something that we can all really learn from, and also it may be of benefit to some adoptees who actually stumble across the podcast and go, okay, I want to listen to that because I want to see if my kind of experience of this is the same as anybody else's, and it might help for them to, you know, to be able to kind of put some kind of stuff right for themselves. Or it may, you know, they may have to listen to a few till they feel the connection with that person. But I think that for me, that's the intent behind it.
Yeah.
It's not just for adopters to learn that there's different experiences and different kind of outcomes to adoption, but it's also for adoptees to be able to say, that's me, thank you, or as in thank you to the adoptee, not to us, but thank you because actually that makes me feel better about this situation I'm in or that situation, or, you know, like I say, they might need to listen to a couple before they get to that, and it might make them angry to hear stories that are positive when theirs is a negative. But actually, if theirs was a negative, then come on and tell us about it, you know, so that we can learn from that, so that we can understand, you know, that actually this could happen. Because all, in my head, all adopters want is for their children to be kind of human beings that can function in a positive way when they become adults. And that's short-circuiting it in that big, like, long definition of what does success look like, because who knows what's, you know, it took me till I was late 30s to become successful. And I mean, you know,
I'm still working on it, functioning adult.
Exactly. So it's a very different format. And we, you know, people who are listening to it should expect it to be a different format as well.
There's a couple of things that with the adopter stories, we just said, hey, who wants to come on? And literally the people are piling through the door trying to get in. I've got a list that I'm working my way through.
Do we get paid for this yet?
No, not yet.
I'm telling you, it's hard work, this adoption and podcast.
Tell me about it. But with the adoptees, I think we're having to do a bit more courting. And that feels right. It feels that we need to kind of... Yeah, I've been in lots of environments where there's been a panel of adoptees.
Mm.
And let's reel out some adoptees. Well, tell us what you think about education. Tell us what you think about this. And you go, actually...
To be fair, I've done it with the two conferences I've done. But it wasn't meant in the way of let's disrespect adoptees by wheeling them out. You know, it was meant in the way of actually, do you know what? These are the voices that we need to hear from.
Yeah.
So let's hear from them kind of thing, you know. And typically, as ever, there are cohorts that, you know, take offence to that. But actually all you want is for them to be able to say, this is my story, this was my experience, and if five people in the audience pick up on, actually, do you know what, that could really help me, then that helps their children.
Yeah, but I think this is different in the sense that I don't want to curate what people say.
No, exactly.
So I want to say, we've talked about this endlessly for years, and in the end I've got sick of waiting for UK adoptees to do it. And why should I? We need to do it. But, you know, that whole
thing. And we'll keep on doing it as long as it's of interest. That's it.
Yeah.
The same with anything we do. So anybody who then pipes up in a year's time when they've all dried up because they don't want to talk to us anymore and says, oh, they're silencing us. No, we won't. We will do it as long as you keep coming forward.
Yes, we'll track
you down. We've got the platform for you to be able to share it, and we are not, like Al says, the curators of that. You're the curator of your own story. We will just ask you one question to kick you off. And to be fair, having listened to 3-4 of them now that you've sent me, they don't need any more than one question generally to get them going.
Well, I think, like most people, it's an unusual situation. I think, like the Form F, I guess a lot of people who've been through the listening have been through the the application process to be an adopter or a foster care. And that process of someone sitting you down and going, you talk.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
an open door.
Yeah.
It's really unusual, and because it's not, it isn't really a conversation. It's a you talk, and I'll maybe ask for a clarification, but I'm not asking for a. How does it feel when your mum told you? How does it feel? Yeah. You know, all that sort of stuff. We've also got
I was just going to say as well, this is a different way, you know, because like my older two, we'd probably talk to you, Al, about it if you sat them down, talk to them. And I think it helps that, you know, we do it it's a non-confrontational way in terms of, you know, you're asking questions that could result in some triggers and stuff like that. We're doing it as we're doing the podcast now in our little studio.
Bigging up your living room.
Yeah, 300 miles apart. And, you know, they don't have to look at anybody to talk through it if they don't want to. You know, it's on their terms, and not on our terms.
And they get editorial kind of full dibs.
Exactly.
Until people are happy with what is being sent out, then it's not sent out.
And, exactly.
But we've all, speaking of editorial hardships, Sally D, she's promised to come on the show.
We should talk about that. That's what I was going to say to you, because we saw Sally D last weekend, didn't we?
Oh, didn't we?
Because where were we last weekend, Al?
We were in that London, up the London.
What did we do last weekend?
We went to Hugh Thornbury's wedding. It was interesting. Yeah, Hugh Thornbury, former chief executive Adoption UK, all round good. Because people might not know it's a long time ago.
I know, and his lovely, gorgeous, beautiful. Lovely wife, Polly Neat.
Yes.
I was going to say Polly Thornbury, but that might not be. I don't know if that's what they're doing.
Please don't.
And I was making an assumption as well. Let's not go there. Who is the CEO of Shelter and used to be the CEO of Women's Aid. And we found ourselves. Like, I don't know. How did we get that invite? I don't know. I just.
It must have been a mailing error.
I think so.
That's all it can be.
I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. Was it when Hugh was, you know, kind of rocking back and forward in his retirement chair and I don't know. And he was just spouting out names at people.
I have to say, I felt we significantly lowered the tone.
Can I just say, I think our kids But yeah, it was. To be fair, we're joking, but I had an amazing time.
We had a right laugh.
We did, and we caught up with Hugh and Polly, and we listened to some amazing speech. I mean, speeches at weddings are always amazing, anyway, aren't they? And this again, this was a very different kind of wedding, wasn't it? It was a very different wedding, and similar to, you know, the way we did our wedding, because they're a kind of blended family of what
your wedding. Anyway, keep going.
That's over and done with now. God, no, we're back into it. We're back into picking knives out of the drawer and throwing them at each other. No, we're not, but you know.
You live in Ireland, it's fine.
That's just joking. It was just, they'd put a new dimension onto it. And the speeches, you know, they're a blended family, and they've now got like what we would traditionally call stepchildren, but you know, there should be no steps in the family. That's what my mother-in-law always says. There should be no steps in the family. Yeah.
In a best Glaswegian accent.
No, mother-in-law. So she's from Norwich.
Okay, sorry.
She's from Norwich. She'd be from Norwich. Yeah. So she talked like that.
Get off my land.
She talked like that. But yeah, and anyway, the reason I mentioned it was because Sally D was there, wasn't she?
She was
our lovely mate, Sally D. It's like we go to the opening of Chris Packett, really, wouldn't we?
Literally. But she was very, she looked like a woman who'd been released from prison because she's finished a book. and we talked, it was great to chat to her. And she said she's more than willing to send us a copy.
From the handcuffs, but you know. Yeah.
JKP publishing it, locked her in a room till she finished it. And so it's really exciting because she's going to come on the podcast, but also, and it'd be nice to speak to her.
I'm going
to
review her book.
Are you going to read it?
I'm going to read it and I'm going to review it. I'm going to be the reviewer. Al, where have you gone? I can't see you. Why are you on the floor? What are you doing? Are you laughing? Are you laughing at me on the floor?
You're going to read a book. But we've also got Helen Bonnick coming on the show. Well, yeah, she's written a fantastic book, Child to Parent Violence and Abuse, A Practitioner's Guide to Working with Families. which is, that's a big book. That's
Where's the parent guide to this, though?
Oh, I don't know. I think this is this would be good enough as it is. Anyway, I feel like we've prattled on for ages. So who else?
You have.
I have. So there's lots of other people. Educationalists. We should get Suddenly Mummy back on. We should get. There's all the people that we said we should get back on that never got back on.
I know.
We're still working through the list.
We are we now starting to recycle guests? Is that what you're trying to say?
Marie Kershaw.
Oh, I love Marie Kershaw.
We should get.
The thing is, I think we picked too soon. Didn't we
did.
We got all the Kraken ones on very early on. But I think we've still got the adoption and fostering podcast brand kind of just keeps
broadening.
gathering yeah. kind of
I think
it's
we
like
should,
a,
we
like a snowball.
Online shop sweatbands.
Oh, yeah, sweatbands
for all the runners. Fostering adoption
should
podcast.
Should we do sign photos and
yeah,
things?
Absolutely. Yeah. Key rings.
Yeah. Yeah. I keep saying we should just go into radio. We should do adoption fostering radio. Adoption and fostering.
Shall I just fade us out? Shall we just keep talking and I shall just fade us out? Because just
I've
nothing.
Got a feeling that might be the way forward because I don't think we're going to shut up.
No. And then the funny thing happened. Oh, I did have I've got a vomit story, and then should we end on that?
Oh, go on, if you must. Oh. You know I don't like vomit.
Oh, so do you remember that?
I can deal with the brown stuff. Not that stuff.
Well, you know, Flossie's now infamous Dayglo pizza.
Yeah, I remember.
Well, I've set myself off again.
To be fair, Al, do you remember? Actually, I'm going to stop you there because you can tell your story in a minute. So, because you've just reminded me of something. So the wedding. Do you remember my wedding?
Yeah.
And someone came down, didn't they, when we were at the house, because we had a little bit of a house party on Saturday. And someone came down and went, "Hey, your toilet's blocked."
Yeah.
And I was like, well, we've just moved in like 5 days ago. We have no plunger. So I had this bright idea because I just thought, well, I'm hosting this and, you know, I want another glass of Prosecco kind of thing. So I said, best man, and I clicked my fingers. I said, your responsibilities aren't over. There's a blocked toilet upstairs. Sort it.
We were like Mario Brothers, weren't we?
With two carrier bags and a tea towel. I'm still not sure what the tea towel was for.
Don't use that tea towel ever.
Yeah. Anyway, it blocked again last week.
Oh.
So I had to send Tris to his friends to get a plunger.
And
he was doing the. But what I'm not telling you is the fact that Jacob had decided not to tell us the toilet was blocked after my poos.
No. Oh.
So anyway, on to your sick story. Go on.
They don't tell you this in the preparation story.
They do not.
No, I don't think it's that interesting. But Peanut, who has a very, very different sort of diet to Flossie, had eaten a bacon sandwich and then regurgitated it. And she came in and said, "I've been sick," and I thought she'd... Oh.
You don't like. You can't do vom, can you? I can't do vom. I really can.
And she'd been...
Oh, he's really gone for it. Honestly, I should do a screenshot of this. He's actually gone a bit green.
I can't tell it. I'll tell you. I'm sweating.
Honestly, I've never seen anybody react to just talking about it. If it was there in front of you, I could get it.
And I had to.
But
go. Anyway,
I do that on purpose. I know it affects you. It's just
I tell you, I'm never.
It's the one thing I
can't
always
tell.
Hate. There's a bomb story.
I can't tell it, but it was. Nah. Oh, it was. It was. Oh.
Can I just ask what colour was it? Oh dear, I feel like we've gone to a new depth in podcasting.
Oh, I think we should end it on that. I am literally sweating. Oh, honestly, I've come out in sympathy. Yeah. Oh, right, I'm going to go. It's been wonderful.
It has, as ever. Hopefully, we've still got listeners left after that.
Yeah.
monotonous, boring ending. Thank you for listening, people, and yes, we shall see you next time.
Yeah. No, bye.
Ta-ta.
'So there was strands of half chewed bacon down the wall and stuck into the toilet seat and on the system. And I was holding a hair back. Stop it.
I can't do this anymore.
And I thought, I hate being a parent. I hate it. Oh, let's not talk about that ever again. Oh, the first time
you've made me cry with laughter.
The first time, I remember I was 27 and it was the first time.
The first time you were 27? Have you been 27 months?
Gracie projectile vomited. And she vomited so hard because she could literally projectile. She vomited so hard.